Chapter 11. The beggar's opera greeted me as I let myself in the front door. Carolyn, stretched out on the couch, was listening to highlights on the radio. Peachum. Secure what he hath got. Have Macheath peached the next sessions, and then at once you are made a rich widow. Polly. What, murder the man I love? The blood runs cold at my heart with the very thought of it. The next air was one of my favorites. Now ponder well, ye parents dear. I used to play it on the violin. Carolyn sat up, reached out a hand, and drew me down next to her. Kissing my cheek, she said that she had something to tell me. Her absence from Rodman's funeral was preying on her. She wanted me to know that good Catholics honor their dead, and that she'd begged Eeyore to appear at the cemetery to show his respects. When he'd refused, citing the bad publicity at my cause, she felt that she couldn't drive out by herself. Although still angry, I told her I understood. Carolyn had all the right instincts, but all the wrong training. She'd been taught to defer to her husband and always be dutiful. The result? While he was keeping mistresses, she was keeping the house. I explained that I would be leaving, moving into my mother's apartment. She urged me to stay, but I told her it was time for me to be on my own. Arnold's in the kitchen, she said simply, reading my mind. He sat, hunched over the sports page, fortified with a bottle of milk and Carolyn's chocolate cake. I closed the kitchen door as he finished one glass of milk and poured another. Milk, it's good for the digestion. The only thing better is figs. He belched. Pardon my grips. Do you have a minute? Eeyore devoured a wedge of cake at least 4 inches thick and washed it down with several gulps of moo juice. Wiping his mouth on his linen napkin, he neatly folded his paper and for the first time since I'd entered the kitchen, looked at me. There's a test I can take to get into college, I said.
You want out?
I don't want to be a dumb dame.
But you're one of us now, one of the gang.
Thanks, but no longer.
Hey, membership is like a tattoo. You can't get rid of it without losing your skin.
Whenever Eeyore felt used, he always fought back. I could see the storm clouds forming. I could also imagine what a black person might feel, branded for life by the color of his skin. I paid my dues and my debts. Nearly choking, Eeyore said, "Have you lost your mind? Let me remind you that Salvatore Zucanier is waiting for a diamond from you. It's only because of me that he hasn't roughed you up. Do you think I have the stone?"
No.
Then please convey that message to Sal.
I have, over and over.
I decided now was the time to start playing my hand, one card at a time. You and I both know that he's threatening me to get at you.
You're talking through your hat.
Mr. Baritsky made the phony gem, which you gave to me with the others and which I gave to Zucanier and Miserier.
What's your proof?
Logic and common sense.
Why would I want the stone?
Not the stone, the money.
You think I fenced it?
So do the Sicilians.
Who's your sauce?
As I told you, Susie and I entered Ahab's office just minutes after he was killed. The killer? Who knows? But the buyer? Among Truffer's notes. I deliberately broke off in mid-sentence to let Eeyore complete the thought. His response took me by surprise, though it was as good as a confession.
For you to leave knowing what you know, it'll cost you 10,000.
I see. You'll buy off Miseria with my money. You'll leave me a pauper.
Stay a thief.
All my sleuthing, all my questions about the diamond and Mr. Truffer had been for this moment. Even so, I chewed over what to say without risking my skin. A lot of things take a back seat to self-preservation. I decided to bluff before playing my ace. I realize, of course, what you've done. The farm, Fallon, housing me here, no amount of money can really repay what I owe you. Those people who say you lack feeling are wrong. You've been generous to me, and I won't forget it.
But you are forgetting it. After taking my eats, you're walking out.
It's time.
Not till I say the dinner is over. Call me when you're serving caviar. I could flavor things so you'd never get a swallow of college. Whether he was threatening to disclose my larcenies or to actually injure me, I didn't know, and I wasn't going to ask. Instead, I went straight to the heart of the matter. You sold one of the Farouk diamonds to Truffer. For how much, I don't know. Profusely sweating from gluttony or guilt, he said, I gotta change my shirt. Don't go away. I caught a small slice of cake and read the sports page. When he returned, wearing a new white shirt still wrinkled from the folds, he'd also changed moods. Instead of threats, he dished out compliments. You got brains, honey. I admire IQ. He paced from one side of the room to the other, finally stopping at the icebox to remove a box of chocolate eclairs. Devouring one in two bites, he seemed restored to his previous sourness. Remember what I'm always telling you. When two people know something, 11 know it. So how can I be sure 9 others won't be put in the know? I got enemies. You could throttle me, I said, testing his temper. If you were smart enough to figure out the con and gutsy enough to tell me, you must have some insurance. My guess is you wrote down the whole story and left it in a safe place, right? Wrong. I'd made no arrangements at all, but I sure as heck wasn't going to tell him. He'd just come up with my out. They don't call you the brain for nothing. You're right. It's all written down. If I don't return, the letter gets opened. Consuming another eclair, he tried to outfox me by asking where I was going once I moved out. If I tell you that, you'll know who has the letter. No one else knows? How about feeding me one of those chocolate hot dogs? Eeyore reluctantly passed me the box, which had one eclair left. For you or for me? I asked. You didn't answer me. All right, I'll eat it myself. As I nibbled away, he ran his tongue over his teeth, either out of hunger or gorge. Since both nourished him, I could never be sure of the difference. Never mind, kid. I know you'd never rat. He gloomily surveyed the empty box. You always taught me hush, hush. Tossing it in the trash bin, he sat down at the table across from me and cut himself another slab of Carolyn's chocolate cake. I didn't have breakfast, he said. Some breakfast. Probing his teeth with a toothpick, he stopped long enough to remark that the diamond he'd sold to Truffer had disappeared. Smacking his lips and swallowing the results of his dental excavations, he asked, Do you know who has it? I felt certain that telling him what I knew would have led to the death of Brad Gillespie, to say nothing of my own fate. As much as I wanted to see Brad pushing up daisies, I'd learned to keep my trap shut. Besides, if I had thinked, I couldn't blackmail Sal, a pleasure too great to forego. Eeyore, how many times do you expect to collect on this diamond? Truffer paid you? Peanuts. And now you want to grab it again. Henny, here I've been saying you're smart as a whip. You want me to tell you what being in the rackets means? It means collecting several times over on what isn't yours. Furious. I silently cleaned the crumbs off the table, washed the dishes, and grabbed a towel, which I slowly twisted. What's wrong, kid? You almost got me killed, I shouted, and all you did was shrug and say the Sicilians were trying to pull a fast one. It was my life that was at stake, not yours. What do you mean, Waz? It still is. Not since I made a deal with Zucania. A deal? No one told me. I learned all my tricks from you, A.R., You're bluffing. I put down the dish towel and took out of my pocket an Eat More's chocolate that I'd been saving for later. Here, this is for you. Eeyore, caught between incredulity and appreciation, decided on the latter and flashed his dentures in the widest grin I'd ever seen him fashion. Smiling didn't come natural to him, that I can tell you. I'll miss you, kid. You're a great counterpuncher. I ought to know. I just threw at you all I had, and you came up aces. How you managed it, I don't know. When are you planning to leave?
Next week sometime.
If you ever need work, you know who to call.
Thanks, I replied, with a lump in my throat, We shook hands. Reaching the door, I turned and said what I'd long had in mind. Your family will love you, you know, even if you're not a big shot. I've often thought of that moment and felt glad that I said what I did. Here was a notorious racketeer who had one goal in mind, to make as much money as possible, not in order to buy silk shirts and suits from England, but to prove to his family that he was no bum. Another dream gone astray. When I left, he was unwrapping the Eatmores.